Blog Talk Radio.
That old thing back. She wants those heroin tracks. She likes me. She fiends for me nightly. She leans for me. Morning she rushed for my touch. This is about lust. Cold sweats occur when I'm not with her.
What's up? What's up? What's up? Good evening. Your boy Scott Burke, the author of the one and only The Clown Times Sports Blog. That's Clown spelled with K. You'll be able to find me on the web at www.theclowntimes.net. And also, you'll be able to find me on Facebook, just talking, spitting, all of that. Just do a search for The Clown Times in the Facebook window. Again, it's Clown Spelled with K. You'll be able to find me there. And before we get into tonight's second series of the second installment of the NFL Superfan Series, I want to just, again, encourage all of you to go out and donate to the ALS Fund. You know, I took the Ice Bucket Challenge yesterday evening. I implore every one of y'all out there to either take the challenge or donate. So either way, all of y'all listening right now have been challenged. So please step up and make a donation. It's a worthy cause, and it's the right thing to do. So with that out of the way, my next guest, he's a man of many talents. We are going to preview the Cincinnati Bengals, and so this guy is not only a frat brother of mine, he is also a singer, also an administrator at a hospital, I do believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, dude, and he's also an avid Steeler hater, so which should be one hell of a podcast tonight, so anyway, this is Andre Edwards. So Andre, what's up, brother?
What's going on, my man? That is the best introduction I think I've ever had in my life.
It's better than calling, being called any, like any other name but the child of God, right?
Exactly, exactly. You had it out.
Oh, shit. It's been a long time, bro. It's been a long time. So before we get into the podcast, I normally give people who've been on here for the first time, especially during the NFL Superfan Series, to tell us a little bit about who you are and how long you've been a fan of your beloved team. So the floor is yours, my brother.
All right. Well, as the illustrious Scott Burke said, my name is Andre Edwards. And I've, man, been an avid Bengals fan since the 49ers broke my heart when I was a little kid the first time, and then they messed around and did it again. Yeah, so, you know, man, it's one of those things. I think I went to college and people were like, wait, you're a fan of who? The Bengals?
Right.
Are you kidding me? So, I mean, through the thin years of the 90s to the very early 2000s, it was tough, man. But, you know, you stick with your boys, you know your team.
That's
and
right.
You live right. And die by them no matter what. And, you know, I'm sure that most of my towards the Steelers is rooted in jealousy for sure. But, you know, I think things are moving in the right direction. You know, we definitely gave a run for that money here recently. So, you know, I'm definitely not one of those bandwagon dudes who jumped on in 2003 when Marvin Lewis came around. I've been there from, you know, the Bruce Coslett years, the Dave Shula years, your David Klinglers, your Achilles Smiths, yeah, all of that stuff, bro. I've been there.
Oh, you're breaking my heart, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah, I'm reliving frightening teenage years and early 20s for sure.
Hey, you almost forgot Dick LeBeau. Now with the enemy.
But you know what, man? I give props to Dick LeBeau. Dick LeBeau, he tried his hand at head coaching and decided, this is not my forte. And a dude who knows his weaknesses and knows his strengths, he's really great at constructing a defense. And so, you know what?
Right.
I'm going to go do that. unfortunately, he decided to go do that for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But, you know, I mean, you know your strengths, you know your weaknesses. That makes a strong man.
Right. Hey, I tell you what, brother. When I, like, as you know, like, and some people out there know, I used to live in Cincinnati for 4 years. And, of course, I married one of your childhood friends, who says hello, by the way. And basically,
at least you got one thing right.
I'm sorry?
I said, at least you got one thing right.
Yeah, yeah, one out of 25 things ain't bad, right?
Exactly.
But anyway, yeah, I do remember, dude, living in Cincinnati during the lean years, and seeing, and it was painful even for me to see. You know, I'm a Steelers fan, and see a bunch of Steelers fans sell out to help stuff the stadium for Steelers games, and worse, Browns fans coming down for Lake Erie, down 76. South 71 and selling out the damn stadium to see the Browns. It was like two virtual extra home games for the Browns and Steelers, and that just wasn't around at any level, but you know, that's just, I don't know if it was like basically the cynicism of the fans, of the long suffering Bengals fans, I might add, or it's just a state of apathy, or maybe both.
I do believe is it was a combination of both, man. I mean, I think some people sold their tickets to those opposing fans in order to make a statement to Mike Brown that things need to change. And if you want Bengals fans to come out and support the team, then you need to make a change. You need to make a difference. And I think, on the other hand, sheer apathy. Why am I going to spend, you know, $65, $75 a ticket to go down and watch them get dominated by the Pittsburgh Steelers as they did time in and time out, see all the terrible towels, see all the folks in the stadium rooting and cheering for their team. But wait a minute, we're in Cincinnati, not Pittsburgh. What is going on? I think, you know, it just got to a point where people just got tired of seeing that, man. And so until changes were made, and, I mean, until Marvin Lewis came in 2003, it was just kind of like, what's the point?
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of fans just kind of went that way. Heck, my own dad, and it pains me to say this, but my own dad is actually a Dallas Cowboys fan because he just got sick and tired of watching the Bengals lose.
Oh my God, a Cowboys fan?
Right.
What?
Right. That,
oh
right.
Hell no.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, you mean the epitome of mediocrity? So, I can't necessarily say I don't understand, because of the Cowboys of the 90s ran the world, you know? And
you want
to root for a team and feel like you're invested in the team that's invested in you. And for a very long time, I don't think Bengals fans felt that way.
To Mike Brown. So speaking of the affirmation, Mike Brown, I remember living in Cincinnati. I hate to throw lots of salt on the wound, but I remember the first few people I met in Cincinnati, the first few locals that I became friends with eventually, said that Mike Brown, over and over again, Mike Brown was the most, or probably still is, the most hated man in town, because he tried to be what his dad was, the great Paul Brown. But Mike Brown, he's a damn good business guy, but he sucks at the football guy. So now it seems like he's finally got it, at least in my estimation. I mean, I'm not up close like you are, but it seems to me like something finally clicked in his head, like 70-some-odd years later, it seemed like, and it's letting his coaches run the show. Now, whether they've expanded the scouting department, I still do not know. But I think now, and correct me if I'm wrong here, now I think that they're building an indoor facility, or I don't know if it's already been built, and he's letting Marvin Lewis do his thing finally and run his team personnel-wise. So do you think that Mike Brown is finally getting it? Because it seems to me that it's finally paying off on the field.
I think I do, to an extent. I mean, I still think he wants to be the overall savior of the team and – kind of say, see, look what I did overall. And, yes, at some point I was as successful as my dad. But that being said, I think somewhere along the way, I think it started in 2003. I don't know, I keep bringing up that year and when Marvin Lewis came, but that was a very fundamental change for this organization as a whole. And when Marvin Lewis came and started to show, hey, if you put the right people in the right places and you start scouting, you start hiring more scouts to scout the entire country instead of, you know, picking up the phone, calling somebody and like, hey, what do you think of this guy? Yeah, that's ridiculous. Let's hire some people and go send those out. You know, and Marvin Lewis's last contract extension, I want to say somewhere 2009, 2010, somewhere in there, it got to a point where everybody thought Marvin was going to leave and that they were going to go find a new coach. But I think that was the, for lack of a better term, come to Jesus moment, where Marvin said to Mike, and this is just me pretending to be a fly on the wall during this conversation, of your way doesn't work. And until you decide that we're going to change that, it's going to continue to not work. So let me hire, you know, a guy like a Duke Tobin, who's director of player personnel and scouting. Let me, you know, run the show. Katie and I, who's Mike Brown's daughter, Katie Blackburn, she does all of the contract negotiations and whatnot, especially for the higher round pick. Yeah, fantastic. I mean, absolutely fantastic. But to let the two of them run the show and put things together the way they feel that they need to do, and I think it, I don't know if it's age, I don't know if it's just coming to that realization that, man, I really have not done a great job with this for the past 20 years or what. I mean, I'm sure some of it has to do with the mortality piece of life in general. And as people get older, you kind of look back and reflect and think, I really screwed that up. How can I make it better? And so since, you know, that transition happened, you're getting a lot better draft picks. You're getting extensions where it used to be, well, Mike Brown is tight-wadded and he doesn't want to pay anybody and he never shells out any money. Geno Atkins, $55 million over 5 years. Andy Dalton, potentially $116 million, you know, over 6 or 7 years. You look at Domagoj Pekko, you look at Leon Hall, you look at Andrew Whitworth, all of the dudes who people see as the quote-unquote core of this team have been re-signed to long-term, big-money deals that in the 90s, that would have never happened. People used to use Bengals as leverage to get more money from teams that they really wanted to go to instead of signing here. And that has been a dramatic, fundamental change in the overall thought process of Mike Brown and everybody within the organization, you know, from top to bottom. So, yeah, I do think he finally gets it. And there was an interview, actually, this year, previous to the season, preseason starting, of him saying, you know, I want to give props to Marvin Lewis and Katie Blackburn, as they're the ones who, one, did the Andy Dalton deal, and two, are pretty much running the show right now. He's still involved and still has a say, sure, but end-all, be-all. He's not making the end-all, be-all call throughout the process. It reminds me of the first time the Bengals were on Hard Knocks, and I can't remember the defensive lineman's name, the defensive end's name that they were trying to, that they were talking about, but basically Mike Brown wanted to make him a tight end because a couple of tight ends got hurt. And you can just see the look on the coach's faces. You know what I mean? Like, they're panning around like, what? What are you talking about, dude? Like, you can't just take some dude who's been defensive end forever and make him a tight end because he looks like he's athletic. Like, that's just freaking ridiculous. And but instead of doing that, it's now Marvin Lewis making the calls. And it's now Katie Blackburn and Duke Tobin and, you know, people who have some football sense about them and not just I own the team and I'm a genetic lottery winner and so therefore I know what I'm doing. Nah, not so much.
Yeah. Right. It's often that people who Most of the time, the smartest person, like person in the room, tends to make the more fucked up mistakes. And
yeah.
So, like my dad always tell me, is that, or used to tell me anyway, if you're the smartest person in the room, you need to get the hell out of that room.
Yep.
And surround yourself with people who make you smart. And so I think that's
exactly.
What Mike Brown is finally doing, to his credit. Now, going back to the late, great Paul Brown, the only potential blemish that I see, like from Paul Brown's tenure as being his founder/president/coach, was that he let the late, great Walsh go.
Yeah, no doubt.
Let him go.
Nope.
He let him go to San Francisco. Bill Walsh, let Bill Walsh go to San Francisco. Now,
yep.
that doesn't necessarily mean that Cincinnati suffered a hell of a lot. The hell, they were great in the 80s, but
right.
They ran into the juggernaut of the 49ers twice. And seeing what type of talent they had, offensive talent they had throughout the 80s, you have to wonder what if. If they kept
Bill
Walsh.
I think that's a key piece that Bengals fans, you know, especially long-term and or older Bengals fans, still talk about to today here in Cincinnati,
mm-hmm.
of how could you let Walsh walk, you know,
mm-hmm.
Whether that was from his eye for talent or his schemes that he put together or whatever that may be, you know, the rest of the coaches he had, the scouts he had, all of those things play together and work together. And if you don't have that, then you go down the path that the Bengals went, which is you still have pretty strong. I mean, you had, you know, dudes like Tiger Johnson and whatnot come through here who did a great job. But when you look to set yourself up for long-term success was what Bill Walsh was looking at versus, you know, what ultimately Paul Brown or what happened with Paul Brown's decision, basically.
Mm-hmm. And that's too bad. That's the only blemish on Mr. Brown's record, because he's that great of a guy. He's a visionary. Did a lot for the city of Cincinnati. He formed and founded the team, and which was a big middle finger to Cleveland. Right.
I mean,
which I think
you talk about contributions to Cincinnati. How about contributions to football? I think he was one of, if I'm not mistaken, I think he was the first, you know, documented person to have playbooks. You know, I mean,
yes,
we talk about playbooks all the time.
Film study, too.
And
yeah,
you got New England dealing playbooks from people.
Yeah.
But he's the first person to have, hey, I have a legitimate playbook that we go off of, you know, so that we can script what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the amount of contributions that Mr. Brown made to the city is one thing, but to just the game of football in general is crazy.
And you guys are lucky to have him. You guys are lucky to have him. I mean, thankfully, Mike Brown is getting, like, his head out of his ass and letting everybody do their jobs, but guys should be, and I know you guys are eternally grateful for Paul Brown doing what he did for the city of Cincinnati, so let's move right off of that. Talk about Marvin Lewis. Like, Weatherman is doing this thing now that he's given the reins to do what he needs to do, except that he has zero playoff wins.
You're left
with
that right
like
now,
aren't you? Yeah. I'm thinking, I mean, because the thing is that the first playoff loss was against, of course, the Steelers when of course, it was a bit of bad luck.
Yeah,
we know
when that was. Thanks, Scott. We know when that was. We got it. We know when that was. Thanks. Yeah,
I think he came up on Offland is still persona non grata in Cincinnati to this day, like because the people still talk about him. But at any rate,
people von Althoffen, the paid assassin. Yes, I recall that name.
The paid assassin, oh, the guy. But here's what I'm hearing, like from Stephen A., a.k.a. Screaming A. Smith on First Take to a few other pundits, thinks that Marvin Lewis should be on the hot seat for not picking up any playoff wins the last. Now, I know that we don't strive for mediocrity, and I know that a lot of Bengals fans are happy with the success that the Bengals are having right now. It seems to me that you all want to be taken to the next level. Marvin wants to take his team to the next level, but is it fair to say that if Marvin Lewis comes up snake eyes in the playoffs again in the next couple of seasons, that he should be on the hot seat, in your opinion?
Yeah.
How does that sound?
And so here's the thing. If Andre Edwards somehow magically became the owner of the Cincinnati Bengals,
right,
and I had the ability to make the determination of whether Marvin Lewis deserves to be here or not, to me,
right,
I set a new standard of, you know what, Coach, we greatly appreciate everything you did from 2003 to 2013. You brought us from places that nobody ever thought we could recover from. We went from perpetual laughingstock of the NFL to a legitimate playoff and division-winning contender year in and year out. You got guys you're drafting fourth round like Geno Atkins, who are freaking absolute superstars. AJ Green, I mean, Calvin Johnson, and in my opinion, then AJ Green. I mean, you got guys around this team that are absolutely insane and loaded with talent. And we appreciate everything that you've done. But harking back to the days of Tony Dungy building his team in Tampa Bay, and you're great, you're wonderful, thank you for all this talent, but you don't have what it takes, at least at this point, to get us where we want to be. So, in my opinion, you bring in Chucky and say,
"Oh wow,
here you go. Here's your team, and we make that move, and we bump it up to the next level." The reality of that is Marvin Lewis works for Mike Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Brown is huge when it comes to loyalty.
Right.
And Mike Brown is perfectly happy with the job that Marvin Lewis is doing for that team.
Mm.
And that is the fundamental difference between Stephen A. Smith yelling and screaming, talking about Marvin Lewis should be this, should be that, whatever. You know, it doesn't matter.
Uh-huh.
You know, we as fans can bitch and moan and complain, and I can't believe Marvin Lewis is still the coach, and how in the hell could you ever – it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is Mike Brown is his boss.
Right.
And I don't care what job you do, if your boss is happy with what you do, you're not going anywhere.
Mm.
Your staff could say, "Oh, man, we really hate that Scott Burks guy. He's a jackass and blah, 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 blah. He doesn't do this. He doesn't do that." But you're cool with the boss? Hey,
right.
Scott, don't even worry about that. I got you. And that's essentially what it is with Mike Brown and Marvin Lewis. You're making me money, and I've moved beyond the fact that Mike Brown is purely concerned with money, but it is, to an extent, about being profitable and making money. So you're making me money.
Right, right.
You have me on Thursday night football. You have me on Sunday night football. You have me on Monday night football, so you're pushing my product. Cincinnati has gone from, again, the laughing stock of the NFL to perennial playoff contenders. Year in, year out. You got one of the most talented rosters, and whether you love the Bengals, hate the Bengals, think the Bengals are ridiculous, they have one of the most talented rosters top to bottom of any team in the NFL.
I never thought I'd hear you say that, hear anybody say that, but that's true. That's very
but
damn
true. They are loaded.
Yeah.
I'm iffy on the quarterback, but honestly, you look at, I mean, cats like Vontaze Burfict, cats like Geno Atkins, Carlos Dunlap, Leon Hall.
Fucking
stud, I mean,
all of them, yes.
All of them. And when your first-round draft pick from this year, who's a cornerback, doesn't have to play, because you have Leon Hall, Terrence Newman, and Adam Jones as your starting cornerbacks, how many teams can say we have three starting cornerbacks that we feel damn good about?
Yeah, right.
You know,
it's
that dude who's playing the slot. You're like, ooh, he's kind of he's kind of shitty, but, you know, we just put him in the slot. Hopefully,
they just throw us
too bad. You know what I mean? We got Champ Bailey on the outside, but we got Rigo Jenkins playing the slot. So hopefully we can mask him a little bit.
Jenkins,
you know?
Not Jenkins, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Just Jenkins.
But honestly, Bengals are loaded. And that's due to the things that Marvin has done. And I also believe that, to an extent, Mike Brown, if he has come to this epiphany of I was in the way before, you got to think that this is year 3 or 4, I can't remember when he signed his extension, that Marvin Lewis has had the amount of control that he needed to have in order to make the team better. So while he may have been here for 10 years, the first 6 or 7 years, I didn't allow him to do shit, if I'm Mike Brown.
Yeah.
Legitimately.
Right.
Because I was still making most of the calls. So if you take the mindset that Mike Brown does finally get it, and Mike Brown has decided to transition that power of leadership, you've only really truly given Marvin Lewis 3 years to change things around and to make a run. And so you can say, hey, you made the playoffs these 3 years. I do need you to do better. But to be honest with you, if you're Mike Brown, you're pretty happy with what the hell's going on.
Right. And why wouldn't he be? I mean, his team only has been in first place the last 2 seasons in one of the toughest divisions in the NFL. If I'm a Bengals fan compared to what I experienced in the 90s, I say hell fucking yes, but it's all about taking the next step. And speaking of which, my man Andy Dalton, you mentioned him earlier getting the contract extension. I like the redheaded brother. I think that he's very talented. I think he's smart. I loved him when he was at TCU. I felt that he was a winner. And I think that the Bengals spending a second round draft pick on him was like a steal at the time. I still stand by that. I still worry if this young guy, Dalton, is he the man to take the Bengals to the promised land? Promised land being at least an AFC championship game. So basically, a lot of people like the extension because it's not really it doesn't hold the Bengals as hostage salary cap wise as I initially thought. There's a whole lot of incentives in that contract they have to live up to. So that's good there. I'm just wondering out loud, is he the guy at the quarterback position that would take your boys to the promised land beyond just a playoff appearance?
Man, honestly, that's the $1 million, $115 million question right there.
Right.
You know, I go back and forth. I have a couple of friends that I hash this out with probably on a weekly basis. I got to give a shout out to my man Chris Lopez on that one. He is on the strictly anti Andy Dalton bandwagon. And I have had to play the Andy Dalton apologist for the last 3 years. And the more and more we have these conversations, the more and more I find myself sliding towards, yeah, man, you're probably right. We need to get rid of this kid.
Right.
Because, you know, he comes with, he cites things like, well, at TCU, while he played well, he was always the underdog, always.
Right.
Even when he played big against Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl, he was the underdog.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, you know, when you come in to the NFL as a second-round draft pick, you're a rookie, Carson Palmer just left, the cupboard is quote-unquote bare. Yes, we drafted AJ Green, but, you know, we got a new offensive coordinator that we brought from the Arena League. We got AJ Green, and we got a second round draft pick from a small school called TCU. So have at it, boys. Have a good one.
Right.
And you mess around and you finish 9-7 and get into the playoffs and you're up against Houston, and legitimately you get your butt beat. But everybody's like, well, that's cool. That's fantastic. Hey, that's great. And people are happy and excited and all of those things. And then the second year rolls around and expectations are a little bit higher and, you know, you kind of like, ooh, hey, you know what? If we had to go to Houston again, we probably get them this year. We probably do. But things fall apart again. You don't play so well. And it's not even you don't play so well. You play terribly.
Right.
And you start to look at things like, all right, what are his statistics when he plays in big games? And I consider anything a big game that's a division game or anything that you put on in prime time. You look at Andy Dalton's stats in prime time, they are god-awful.
Mm-hmm.
You look at his stats in the playoffs, they are god-awful. I mean, like one touchdown, 6 or 7 interceptions, 4 or 5 fumbles. I mean, it's terrible. And so you start to wonder where are those big games, where's that big game experience?
Right.
To where you're the one that's expected to win. You know, when you walk in and it's, you know, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, and you're like, man, how do we ever overcome these odds? There's no pressure. You just go out and you play carefree and you do what you do, and holy crap, we messed around and beat Aaron Rodgers last year. Holy crap, we messed around and beat Tom Brady last year, you know?
Yep.
But there's no pressure because you're not, quote-unquote, expected to win.
Right.
But
right.
when you have San Diego in your crib where you're undefeated all year with a top-3 defense in your own house, and in the third quarter you throw, you know, 2 interceptions and fumble the ball away, clearly that's your fault.
Right. I agree.
And the reason why, I mean, we can talk about the defense, you know, gave up 160 yards rushing. We can talk about A.J. Green dropping the touchdown pass down the sidelines. That was one of the better balls Andy threw that day. But ultimately, win or lose, it comes down to the quarterback and the quarterback play. They get way too much credit when they win, and they get way too much blame when they lose. But that's what comes with the territory. When you sign a $115 million contract, sorry, that's what you just signed up for.
Yes, sir.
When you want to be paid like the big dogs, you need to be able to perform. And that is my biggest beef and my biggest knock right now on Andy Dalton is, what are you going to do for me when the lights come on? What are you going to do for me? The rubber hits the road, and it's time for you to do what you need to do in order for us to move on. And honestly, Scott, I want to say, I think he has what it takes, and I think he can do it. And part of me truly believes that because I think the people around him are just that good. I mean, you get in trouble and you can dump a ball off to Giovanni Bernard, who makes people just look silly. Just silly. You know, when you can do that, when you can throw a ball to Tyler Eifert or Jermaine Gresham down the seam when they're going up against a slow linebacker or a small safety, it's no contest. When you can just heave a ball up to A.J. Green, close your eyes, and just say, holy hell, he caught it. That's what I'm talking about. Who cares, man? But
yeah,
I can't have you, you know, missing undercutting linebackers. I can't have you, you know, missing, quote-unquote, easy reads. It's not easy for me because I'm not an NFL quarterback. But everybody that I see who talks about it and breaks down the film, he should see these things. So I'm going to go with what they see and what they say.
Right.
And ultimately, when you mess up, you need to take blame and responsibility. And he didn't really do that last year. And at the end of the playoff loss to San Diego, he basically was like, we as a team, we did this, we did that, or we didn't do this and we didn't do that. Tom Brady was saying in that interview, if he threw 2 interceptions and fumbled the ball in the third quarter, and say, that was my fault. That's on me, and I take full responsibility for that. Ben Roethlisberger would say, that's my fault. I fucked up. That's on me.
Right.
Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, heck, even dudes who I don't think are the greatest leaders on their team, Matt Stafford, Jay Cutler. I messed that up, man. That's on me. It's none of this we stuff. And so I'll be very interested to see this year, you know, so far during the preseason and in camp, Andy Dalton has been fantastic by all accounts. And I'm talking dramatically different. Dropping dimes, you know, hitting people 43 yards, 57 yards, deep down the field, in stride, not having to slow up for balls. I mean, everything that the kid has been doing this off season and during this preseason has been nothing but heralded. But again, there's no pressure, and the bright lights aren't on. But when it comes to your first game of the year, I believe it's 1 o'clock in Baltimore.
What yes, it is.
Speaking of the schedule,
I'm glad you said – interesting segue, good segue. Now, this is where the tough part hits, to your point. I think roster-wise, talent-wise, you guys are one of the best in the AFC. I think that your squad, along with my squad, along with that squad up in Baltimore, up north of I-95, those three squads alone – make the AFC North one of the toughest divisions of football outside of the NFC West. In fact, I'm going to say it. It's the NFC West toughest division of football followed by the AFC North. I don't give a shit about the NFC North. As far as I'm concerned, Minnesota sucks. They also swallow, so I don't care about that. The whole thing is, I'll take our top three teams in the AFC North against Green Bay, Chicago, and Detroit any motherfucking day of the week. That's how I feel.
Agreed.
And that's where I'm gonna leave it. However, going back to the schedule here for 2014, to your point, you guys have to go to Baltimore. Now the good news is, and it's a good news for me too as a Steelers fan, we get to play the AFC South and the NFC South this year. That's the good news. As a matter of fact, I'm coming to say it. I don't think Indianapolis will beat any team in the AFC North. That includes the Cleveland Brownies. I don't see it happening. I think the Browns.
Really?
That's what I think. Now, that's what I'm saying right now. The Browns are tough on defense. They're top 10 on defense. As a matter of,
if you can't score points, you can't win.
Right.
If you can't score points, you can't win.
And I'm just saying, too. Like, I think I could round up a team of 11 cats from downtown D.C. and I'll score the Cleveland Browns. That's just what I think. I just think that we could stop the Cleveland Browns defense. I mean, offense, rather. I just don't think that Indianapolis is all as tough as people make it out to be. But that's later on. That's later on for my prediction show in a couple of weeks. But anyway, I digress big time. I think what's going to be your detriment is this particular part of schedule. You guys got a first-place schedule, which means I'm looking at it right now, and I'm sure you already know this by now. You go to New England on the Saturday night game after your bye week in week 5.
Yep.
You guys go to – and this just comes – and this just comes from playing the NFC North. You guys go to New Orleans.
Yep.
That's the only tough schedule. That's the only tough game from the NFC South, as far as you guys are concerned. But you also got to play Denver. Get to play Denver. The good news is you get to play Denver at home. That's the good news. That's the good news. It's a Monday night ball game. That's the good news. The bad news is it's Peyton Manning.
Right. Oh,
it's
no.
Peyton Manning
no, no.
under the bright lights. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. And I think. And hell, you know what? Dude, bump it. I'll say this. I think that you're split against the Ravens, you're split against the Steelers, you should sweep the Browns. Okay? You guys have no business losing to Cleveland. And you guys had no business losing to Cleveland last year, by the way, but we won't go there. So what I'm looking at right now, I'm being real, I look at splits between Baltimore and Pittsburgh. That's two losses.
Yep.
I don't know if you guys go to New England and beat Tom Brady.
That's
just
tough.
Me. So I see three losses.
Yeah. No, I'll give you that.
And Right, and based in New Orleans, no one's winning in New Orleans. No one's winning
right.
New Orleans. I
don't
care what anybody says. So that's four.
Right.
And the only thing is, I'm kind of on the fence about Denver. It sure is Peyton Manning, because you guys play him at home. Guys, you should be fired up to go against the Denver offense, which I think is soft as tissue paper, as witnessed in the Super Bowl. So I'll probably give you that one. But that leaves you with what, four or five? I think that's four losses. Let's just go again. Pittsburgh, Baltimore, New England, and New Orleans. Four losses. So you guys should win between 11 and 12 games. But the thing is, the division is so tough. Would that be enough? And that's where the first place schedule may be a detriment. Baltimore has a far easier schedule. In terms of like within the conference, you know, they play two third place teams. I think they play Oakland and I think Miami. Pittsburgh, we play damn. Who the hell we play? Okay, I know we go to the Jets. I'm not scared of any team led by Geno Smith, and we host Kansas City on the Monday night game. So. Just take those just the comparisons between the three teams in those two games. I'll go out on a limb and say Baltimore's and Pittsburgh's two games are much easier than Cincinnati's two games.
Absolutely.
That being New England and Denver. So that may be the difference between how the three teams finish. I personally believe that all three teams will make the playoffs. I think both wild cards will come from the AFC North. Because I think Baltimore and Pittsburgh are that much better this year, and I think you guys are still better as well from last year. So what are your thoughts on how you think will the Bengals repeat as champs of the AFC North, and how will they navigate through a much tougher division next year? Or actually, like this coming season, I should say.
So as hard as this is to say, and made a very strong beverage. Hold on a second.
It might be tough to swallow. No pun intended.
Yeah, I had a you know, swallow a little kvassia there. I'm good. Okay, I'm back. If there's any team in the AFC North this year that slightly concerns me, it would be the Pittsburgh Steelers for sure. I think, for whatever reason, Todd Haley and Roethlisberger are finally on the same page, and I think that's gonna work. If you look at their last, eight games or so last year, man, they were playing like gangbusters. And I promise you, when I was watching the San Diego game, and they got that Luke called during the field goal thing, there was not a happier Bengals fan on the face of the planet than me, because I'm like, man, if we got to play Pittsburgh, good Lord have mercy. I want no parts of that team right now. So, I sent my check to that ref who missed the call and sent me a thank you note, and
right.
It was all good. I agree with you. I think the Clowns, you got to score to win, man. And watching Hoyer, I don't know if it was the knee injury or whatever it was, but, he just doesn't look like the same dude, at least right now. I don't know if it's the pressure of Johnny Football breathing down your neck. You know, if you make a mistake, basically he's about to come in.
Right.
Or whatever it is, he just doesn't look comfortable. He doesn't look like the same dude. If Johnny Football makes it through a season healthy, I will be shocked.
I agree with that. I agree with you on that.
Yeah, when you got cats like Terrell Suggs, Fontez Barfitt, Ryan Shazier, Troy Polamalu, Geno Atkins. Nada. Come on, man. We're playing the AFC North. You can't improvise and run around and whatever. Cats like Carlos Dunlap will walk you, son.
Yes.
And hit you hard. Yes. And I mean real hard. And Johnny Football don't weigh but a buck 65 wet with lead shoes on. So you don't want to be doing that, man. And especially in this division. You might be able to get away with that in the, you know, NFC South, you know, the Drew Brees and, you know, those cats and my man from Atlanta, you know, Matt Ryan. Y'all can run around carefree and not really get beat up all that much. You can do that down there. You can't do that up here. You know,
right.
We get snow, we get ice, we get jacked up fields and all that. Yeah, it's just not going to work.
So,
honestly, I kind of discount the Browns, at least this year. Baltimore, I'm just not as high on Baltimore as I think other people are. Joe Flacco just doesn't impress me. I think their offense before was really truly predicated on Ray Rice and Anquan Boldin. And
right.
Boldin left, and Ray Rice is a shell of himself, or at least he was last year. I don't know. You know, maybe he got reinvigorated by beating up on his wife, you know, whatever, over the offseason.
Yeah, don't get me started on the two games.
Maybe they gave him a little spark in his giddy up there. But, you know, I mean, I think their defense is still formidable. You know, you got Suggs and Nada in those cats. I mean, they're still a formidable defense. But,
right.
I mean, name somebody who scares you offensively from the Ravens. I mean, scares you, where you're like, ooh. And, I mean, Ray Rice 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Torrey Smith, maybe.
Torrey Smith, maybe, but he's inconsistent at best. If you have somebody who can run from a cornerback perspective and run with him, you're good. And he doesn't – most of his damage is done deep down the field. It's not a lot of crossing patterns. It's not a lot of shifty, make-you-miss type stuff. It's – he made a move or made a double move and took you deep, and Flacco found him deep. If you got somebody who's savvy enough who can either keep him from going deep by checking him at the line or who can flat-out run with him, he concerns me at best. He doesn't scare me. You know?
Right.
So, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if the Ravens did not make the playoffs for a second year in a row. I think once they decided to pay Joe Flacco that kind of money, they had to go through a bit of attrition, and they lost key weapons like an Anquan Boldin,
who was basically
Flacco's safety blanket.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the dude he went to when he was in trouble, and he made every single catch that needed to be made, and now they don't have that.
Yeah.
And when it comes down the division comes down to Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. You kind of look at the pattern of the Steelers. They're good for 3 to 4 or 5 years. They have a down year, maybe two, but not very often, usually a down year, and then they're right back in it. That's typically been their pattern, even during the Cowher years. They run roughshod on people for 4 years, 5 years, kind of do a bit of a transition, and then they're back in what they needed to be from a playoff perspective. So I fully expect Pittsburgh to be right back in the fray and right back, you know, in the middle. Does Cincinnati win the division? I don't know. I would probably, if put a gun to my head and you have to make a decision right now today, I would probably have to lean towards no. Simply for the fact that if I need Andy Dalton to play big in big games, the last 3 years shows me he can't do that.
Right.
Now, if he's a different cat this year and can come in and win those games, then that's a completely different story. But I'm going off of what history tells me. History tells me for the past 3 years, when it's big game time, you don't show up well. So that means you lose to New England. That means you lose to Denver. That means you lose to, you know, Pittsburgh once at least and Baltimore once at least. And we got a Thursday night against the Cleveland Browns. Who the hell knows? We might mess around and lose that too. So, you know, if we're going based upon history.
Right. course.
And I think the Steelers play consistently. I think the Steelers play strong. I think when you have a franchise quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger, you always have a chance.
Right.
And as much as I sincerely can't stand them, again, rooted in jealousy for sure. You know, I always have to give them, you know, their due respect. They're a solid team, man. I think they drafted really well this year. And it'll be a tough battle. If whoever wins the division will probably come out, you know, 10-6, maybe 11-5, somewhere in there. But I do believe at least two playoff teams come from the AFC North, and I believe those two will be the Steelers and the Bengals. Now, order-wise, I'm pulling for the Bengals, but at the same time, if they ended up with 5 or 6 seed, that wouldn't shock me either.
It's going to be tough, brother. It's going to be tough. It's going to be fun as hell, especially with Christmas time. I'll be back in town.
No doubt.
To toss some trash.
No doubt. No doubt.
But something's telling me it's going to come down to that very last game of the season. So I'm looking forward to it. I know my in-laws in Cincinnati are looking forward to it. They remind me of it every other day. So we'll see.
You already know.
We'll see. Yes, sir. Hey, thanks a lot, bro. I'll be in touch with you throughout the season, man. And I'll have your ass back on here when we get going, like, halfway through the season. So be on the lookout, brother.
I'm there anytime you need me, bro.
All right. Thanks a lot, man. See you soon.
All right. 06. Go.
06. All right. Peace. That's my man, Andre Edwards, holding it down, my frat brother. He was my ace when we were online together way back when. He brought the pain, brought the noise on his Bengals. I agree with him, though, for the record. I think the Bengals are solid. I think that they're better than last year's team. I think their points will run. I just think the schedule made those two games may be the difference between them repeating as division champs or coming up as a wild card. It's going to be a tough division, Cincinnati, Baltimore, my Steelers. But that's why we love the NFL. That's why we're looking for this season. At any rate, tomorrow we'll keep the party going. We're going to talk with my man, Eddie Masonette, about his Jacksonville Jaguars. Yes, there are fans of the Jacksonville Jaguars out there. So look forward to that. He bought the noise last year, so he'll bring it again tomorrow night. So you'll have something to look forward to. But thank you for listening to Scott versus the Clown Hour. 06, peace out. Night. Nice.